Hey, ladies. Got a struggle? Need to vent? It's time to join your voice and get down to business with some critical thought, where like-minded ladies share their personal experiences to empower each other, using critical thinking to make wise decisions. And now, here's your host, Lady C.
Hey, this is Lady C. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Critical Thought under the special series, The Struggles of Jehovah's Witness Women.
If you've been in the struggle and want to appear as a guest on our show, email us at exjwct@gmail.com.
Well, my upcoming guest lived her life right out of the Jehovah's Witness handbook. She was born in the organization, baptized at 10, and pioneered right out of high school. And unfortunately, at the age of 16, she began battling severe clinical depression. And we know how this plays out in the congregation. Whenever someone is battling depression, they're always being accused of not being spiritual enough, not going out in field service and so forth. And she received all of this type of feedback from the brothers. So you can imagine what her life was like. She's battling depression. She doesn't know how to get assistance and get help. And yet, the very people that's supposed to be there for her, they're accusing her of not doing more for this organization. So this young lady has been through it all, done it all, and seen it all. Please join me in welcoming Cassie Meyer.
Hi, Lady C. I'm really happy to be on The Critical Thought, sharing my story. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, you are most welcome, Cassie. I'm just very happy that you're willing to share your story. And just as a foundation for our conversation today, let's talk about you and your baptism at age 10. What was it that encouraged or inspired you to get baptized at such a young age?
Yes, I did get baptized at a very young age. I was born into it, and so I just really thought that by getting baptized as soon as possible, I would be making my parents happy, first of all, and, you know, all my surrogate parents I had at the Kingdom Hall. And, you know, from the time you can understand, I mean, you have people in the congregation telling you, you'll make Jehovah happy if you get baptized. So that was, you know, what was pounded into my head since I was a baby. So that was the main reason it happened, is that I wanted everybody to be proud of me.
Wow. Now, how many siblings do you have?
I have two sisters and one brother.
Okay. So where do you fit in the scheme of the ages?
I'm the youngest.
Okay. So you're the youngest. You got baptized at age 10. What did they do?
They were all baptized a little later, probably 16 or older. So they didn't get baptized as young as I did.
Okay, so are you the only one in your family that is battling depression?
My mother battled mild depression, but no one else ever had a severe clinical depression as I was diagnosed with at 16.
Okay, so think about this. You're 10 years old when you get baptized, but your older siblings, they're much older when they get baptized. So do you think that your association with Jehovah's Witnesses and this peer pressure to get baptized at such a young age could have had something to do with your clinical depression?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I don't blame it fully on the organization, but I'm being raised as a Jehovah's Witness. You know, you're only a child, and to be raised in the way that they raise children, you're constantly made to think about the end coming and Armageddon. And, you know, if you do something wrong, you know, you may not make it. And so that's bound to cause mental issues for a child, because that's not a normal way of thinking. And so I definitely attribute a lot of how I was raised and being baptized at such a young age to having those problems as I grew older.
Right. That is so true. Now, when you all discovered that you were having this clinical depression, how did your parents react in getting you help?
Well, at first, they kind of chalked it up to just being a moody teenager and didn't really understand that I was truly struggling with something a lot deeper than that. And at first, once they found out that I was truly had a serious problem, they found a counselor for me who was actually a brother, and I went to him for a short time, didn't find much help there. And so basically, it was just I had to suffer through it until I got a little older and got a job and was able to have benefits, medical benefits, and then I went and sought help on my own.
So this brother, you know, that was a therapist, You know, what type of information did he give you?
Somewhat helpful. I mean, there were just, it was very vague. I think he was a little more apprehensive about the information he would give me just because of being a witness. And I think he focused a little more on the whole witness aspect of it, that, you know, I have Jehovah to pray to and things like that to help me, instead of things that I could apply practical in everyday life that would have been more helpful to me.
So it was more like a conflict of interest, because given his training as one of Jehovah's Witnesses, if he were to actually give you the information that you needed, it would be like stepping over the line with the Jehovah's Witness teachings.
Exactly, exactly.
So are you basically saying that he just fed you the same watchtower diet that you would have gotten if you would have gone to one of the elders in the congregation?
Right, yeah.
So you say you got your new job, you got benefits, and you were able to get help from someone outside of the Jehovah's Witness community. You know, what type of things did your new therapist say to you? I mean, did you tell them that you were one of Jehovah's Witnesses?
I did. And a lot of them, while they didn't badmouth the organization per se, because they are professionals, I mean, there was mention that, you know, your religion probably plays a part in what you're suffering from, just because they've met up with other witnesses in their practices that, you know, have gone through the same thing. So it's not at all uncommon, unfortunately. But, you know, I've actually first met up with my doctor when I was actually hospitalized at a hospital for depression. So he was actually the first one who was actually able to really help me.
So since your departure from the Watchtower culture and the organization, how are you feeling now?
Now I'm doing much better. You know, I still have my days when I struggle, but that's just living with depression. And, you know, because I've been able to find a doctor who's able to help me with medications and also a really great counselor, they've both been able to really help me a lot. So, I mean, now I'm doing much better.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Cassie, because, you know, with all the guilt tripping, the do more, the watchtower diet, and with you battling depression, I know that was just too much for you to handle.
It was, you know, a depression in itself makes you feel worthless. And so when you add on the fact that, you know, the guilt tripping that the witnesses put you through, and, you know, never feeling good enough, never feel like you're doing enough, that only made the depression even worse. And so, you know, I eventually came to the point I felt like God cared nothing about me because I couldn't do as much as I wanted to. And so it was basically like I was just ready to give up.
Now, how did you feel growing up in the organization? I mean, you know, you get baptized at 10 years old. You think you're making everyone happy. How did you really feel inside?
As far as believing what I was told, I mean, I was 10, so I really didn't think that much about it. But, you know, it's a pretty picture that they paint for you to live forever, and you get to have a pet tiger and all that fun stuff. But, you know, it always did bother me that, you know, I had a grandfather who I was crazy about, and he never did become a witness. And it always bothered me that, you know, I would go to the meetings and hear in talks that people who didn't serve Jehovah were going to be destroyed. And I'm like, but my grandpa's a really good person, and I love him very much, you know. So I couldn't really ever comprehend in my mind why Jehovah would destroy my grandpa, because he wasn't a wicked person, and I loved him so much. So that was really something that really bothered me, even at a very young age.
And how old were you? Do you recall how old you were when you started feeling that way?
I was probably around 7 or 8 years old, you know, and it all kind of came together for me at that point when thinking about my grandpa, but then also people I knew at school. You know, I wasn't close friends with any kids at school because I wasn't really allowed to be, but, you know, kids who were nice to me, and I always thought, well, they're not bad people, so I didn't understand why Jehovah was going to destroy them.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how children can think these things and at a young age realize that something doesn't sound right, something doesn't feel right. And yet our parents, that's dragging us to these meetings all the time, they don't stop and think about something as simple as that, you know? But, you know, let's fast forward a little bit and discuss a little bit about what you started to see later on in your life and what some of the cracks in the foundation was to you actually seeing this religion for what it really is.
The first really big one I noticed was when they changed their view on taking blood, and they said that it was okay to take blood fractions. That really bothered me because, you know, for so many years it was absolutely no blood. That was just it. And so many people, even people I personally knew, had died or had lost family members or even children. So the fact that they were following that belief that, you know, no blood. And so when they changed it to that you could take blood fractions, I just thought, okay, but there's no responsibility being taken for the fact that people have lost their lives. They've lost children. And there's no responsibility being taken there. I mean, we just all of a sudden change. And it's just like, okay, but, you know, there are lives that were ruined because of what you were originally telling people. So I had a hard time comprehending that because, you know, the Bible makes it very clear that God does not change. And so I just couldn't comprehend how God would just arbitrarily change something that had affected so many lives already.
Right. So you, along with millions of other people, are sitting at the Kingdom Hall thinking about these very thoughts, realizing that you can't say anything about it, because if you do, you're going against the organization. And so it just simply makes you agitated sitting there knowing all of this.
It does. It's very frustrating, you know, because you know if you express that you have a different opinion, you're in trouble. So, I mean, you just kind of have to keep quiet and go along with it. And it can be really frustrating.
Yeah. And, you know, for so many people that are no doubt listening to this program right now, they may feel the same way. They may be going to the Kingdom Hall. They might be lurking on the internet, listening to programs like this. If you could give those individuals one piece of advice about the organization, what would that be?
You know, it's so hard to stand up and say when you have a difference of opinion. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit that it is so hard because you do have a lot to lose if you decide to leave even. And, you know, I'm right there. I've lost my parents. I've lost an aunt I was close to and one of my sisters. And so it's hard and it's scary. But at the same time, you know, you can't live a life that you don't really believe in. And so you're going to find out that that's a miserable way to live. And so, you know, it just kind of comes down to the price you're willing to pay for your freedom. And, you know, it's a sad choice that you have to make, unfortunately, in that organization. But for me, definitely, my freedom was worth everything.
And what did you do, you know, what did you do to start researching the organization to start your journey out of this religion?
I just kind of started with the internet, just kind of looking at different sites and venturing outside of the organization's publications, watching some videos on YouTube. It made me nervous at first because, you know, that's a big no-no. You don't go looking at apostate websites and things. And, you know, that's where I came across learning about their affiliation with the UN and, you know, all the false prophecies. And that led me to reading Crisis of Conscience. And learning all of those things. And, you know, by learning those things, it really opens your eyes to seeing that the organization is definitely not what they claim to be.
And after acquiring this newfound knowledge you had, how long did it take you before you actually stopped attending meetings at the Kingdom Hall?
I stuck it out for a really long time. I quit going when I was about 33 years old. And, or I'm sorry, 32. And, so I stuck it out for a really long time just because I was afraid of losing my family. But it came down to me being so miserable, trying to live that way of life, that I had to give it up or else it was going to end very badly. And I just, another thing that really made me walk away was when they changed their belief on the generation that would not pass away. When they came up with the overlapping generation, I tried so hard to understand that and I never could. And there was no one who could explain it to me. And so that's when I knew. I just knew that that was something that was made up to have them try to explain why the things that were supposed to have happened haven't happened yet. And that's what really helped me to know that this was not the truth.
Yeah, and especially after reading Crisis of Conscience, I know you were able to really start to understand the inner workings of the organization. Now, what about your struggles as a woman? What were some of the things that you noticed, you know, that made women outcasts, or you weren't treated fairly just for being a woman?
Definitely. I mean, there's always that feeling when you're a female in the organization that you don't matter much. I mean, sure, they let you be a pioneer and all that, but there's never the opportunities available to you that there are to brothers. You know, being an elder, you're more likely to be accepted at Bethel if you're a single brother, things like that. But also, I mean, growing up, even, I would watch Married Sisters, and there was one sister, we were out in service one day, and she just had suggested that we work a block differently than what the brother had said. And she said it, and then she goes, "Oh, wait, I'm being a Jezebel. I'm sorry." And I just kind of stopped and thought to myself, you made a suggestion. You know, it wasn't that big a deal. And that really stuck with me because I thought, you know, as a woman, she couldn't even comfortably express an opinion or a suggestion. So, you know, that always really bothered me.
Yeah, and when you think about what she was suggesting, she was just saying to work a different block. You know, you're going over to this block instead of that block, and now all of a sudden she's a Jezebel.
Exactly. It made no sense to me.
What about your parents and your mother? What was their relationship like? I mean, was your father an elder?
No, he was never an elder. There were things that had happened in my family's past that prevented him from being an elder. But, I mean, him and my mom, they were good parents. And I love them both dearly, and I miss them very much. But, you know, they basically had a atypical witness marriage. He was the head, and, you know, what he said went. So, I mean, that was basically what every witness marriage I knew of was like.
Did you ever see your mother stressed out? Maybe she wanted to do something that your dad wouldn't allow? Or did they ever have any disagreements based on Watchtower teachings?
My mom was pretty easygoing as far as all that went. I mean, she never really went against him. I think maybe there were times when she maybe wanted to do something different, but she pretty much always acquiesced to whatever he wanted. So
basically she knew her role and she made things easy for your dad.
She did. She did.
Yeah, because there's so many sisters that they really don't even have an opinion. They don't even question anything. They just do what they're told. Now, were your parents raised in the organization?
My parents came into the organization in the early 70s. They started studying. They were not raised in it, but they did come in the 70s, and then they proceeded to raise their children.
And what about 1975? How did that affect your family? Did they come in before 1975?
They came in not too long before, but I think it was close enough. They really didn't get too involved in, like, selling their house or anything like that. So they didn't get as affected by that as a lot of people did. But I remember my mom talking about it because I'd asked about it once, and she said, yeah, there were definitely, you know, they were definitely pretty sure that was when it was going to happen, and they were pretty positive, and people were selling their houses, quitting their jobs. And so, she said she remembered that happening.
So what type of relationships did you have? Did you ever date any brothers in the congregation?
I did. When I was about 26, there was a brother. I had known his family since we were both little, and he approached me and asked if I would like to start dating, and so we started dating, and at first it was okay, but then as things progressed, he became emotionally abusive, just comments about my looks, or if I gained any amount of weight, that was a problem. You know, it was always, I should feel really blessed that, you know, he was dating me because, you know, I was so lucky to have him, because really who else would want me? And, you know, it was never that he was lucky to have me. So it was a very one-sided relationship. And, you know, with already suffering with depression, being emotionally abused like that did not help the matter. So, yeah, it turned out to be a really bad situation. And thankfully, it didn't go any further. We'd never got engaged or anything like that. He broke up with me before it went that far, thankfully.
Now, do you think that you would have kept dating him had he have not broken up with you?
Unfortunately, I think I would have. just because, like a lot of women within the organization, I felt like, you know, if I don't hold on to this one, I'm not going to find another one. You know, there are so many single sisters who would love to have a mate within the organization, but there's just not that much to choose from. And at that point, my self-worth was really at a low point. And I unfortunately probably would have kept seeing him, and I'm sure the abuse would have gotten worse, but thankfully that ended. So
how did you feel after he broke up with you?
You know, at first I was really sad and devastated. And I, you know, there was a part of me thinking, okay, well, this is it. I'm never going to find anybody else. So just might as well resign myself to being single. And, you know, but as time went on, eventually I saw that it was a very good thing that it ended and he was out of my life.
You know, what you're saying is absolutely true. And it is probably one of the biggest struggles of Jehovah's Witness women, because there aren't that many brothers in the congregation. It kind of reminds me of when it's going to snow outside and everybody's rushing to the store to buy a loaf of bread. And then you get there and you see this loaf of bread and it's like, oh my God, it's all smashed in. It's not what you would really buy if there was other loaves available. It's the same thing with the Jehovah's Witness women. It's like you have these men there. They're not what you really want, but you say to yourself, I don't want to remain single. So you just snatch one of them up and go for it. And it's not really what you want. So it is kind of a struggle for women. And it's really sad that it has to be like that. And so here you were willing to go through all this abuse just to have someone in your life. So what did he do after he broke up with you? Did he ever marry anybody else?
After he broke up with me, I had found out that he'd actually cheated on me with someone, another sister. And they both were reproved. He lost his ministerial servant standing over it. But then they ended up getting married, and I guess they're still together. I'm really not sure at this point.
Oh, really? What a jerk. Was the sister in the same congregation as you?
No, he had actually started going to a different congregation at one point while we were dating, and she went to that congregation.
And what were the friends in general like in your congregation?
It was not a very close-knit congregation at all. A lot of the time, I got the feeling that they were tolerating each other. Yeah, there definitely was not a lot of closeness in the congregation.
Well, how about you? Did you have any close friends in that congregation?
Not in the congregation that I went to. I did have a close friend who I had grown up with. She went to a different congregation. But, I mean, I was pretty isolated as far as friendships went. Not only was I extremely shy, but, you know, with the depression I suffered, people tended to shy away from me just because I think a lot of times they just didn't know what to say if I was sad or whatever. And they were just kind of afraid of it. And, you know, that really left me really isolated.
So what is life like for you now on the dating scene? Are you dating anybody now?
I am. I am dating a guy I met on Match.com. We've been together for about 9 months now, and he's just great. He's just the most genuine, sweetest person I've ever met. I mean, I could not ask for a sweeter guy. He treats me with so much respect and so much dignity, and just, you know, tells me I'm beautiful and gorgeous all the time. And just, you know, he's a joy to be around, and I absolutely love spending time with him. So yeah, it's a totally different experience. And I just find that really ironic that, you know, a guy who is worldly treats me so much better than the experience I had dating a witness guy.
Now, it's interesting that you met your friend on Match.com, and I'm just sitting here thinking about, I never asked you the question on how you all met, so I'm sitting here with my mouth wide open, like, oh my God. So you got to share with us about how that experience came about. What made you decide to go on Match.com?
Well, after I had faded from the organization, I was really lonely, and my cousin, who is not a witness, I had been getting really close to her, and we've been talking a lot. And I just expressed to her that I was just really lonely. And she said, well, you know, why don't you try the online thing? And at first I was like, no way, I'm not going to do that. And she was like, oh, come on, just give it a try. She's like, you know, try it once or twice. If you don't like it, you can cancel the account. So finally she talked me into it. And so I did it. And for someone who had only dated one guy who was a witness, and, you know, dating in the witness world is a lot different from dating in the world.
Right.
And so I went out with a few different guys on a couple dates, and none of them really stuck, but I met some nice people. But then I finally met my current boyfriend, and we couldn't be happier.
Okay, so give us more details about how you connected.
I had actually, on my profile, I had sent a wink at him, because you can wink at people you're interested at to let them know, you know, that you're interested in them. And so I had winked at him because I thought he was pretty cute. And he replied, and we just kind of talked through emails for a day or so. And then he asked if I'd like to meet up for a drink, and I did. And we just hit it off, and from then on, we've been inseparable. So,
wow, amazing story. So did you set up a criteria list of what you were looking for in an individual online?
I did have a criteria. I made it pretty clear on my profile that I wasn't looking for, you know, one night stands or anything like that. I was looking for someone who truly wanted to date. And, when I read his profile, he seemed to kind of be looking for the same thing. He made that pretty clear as well. So, I figured I would, you know, let him know I was interested and see what would happen.
Well, that's an excellent experience. And I know people listening right now are thinking the same thing, because, you know, it's always good to hear a positive story or outcome that comes about from online dating, because I know a lot of people have had some bad experiences too.
There have been some nightmares for some people, I know, but fortunately mine worked out really well. So
that's excellent. I'm glad to hear that. So would you suggest or recommend that to other people?
I would. My only word of advice would be, you know, use common sense. I mean, you can pretty much tell by looking at a person's profile what they're like, what they're looking for. And so, I mean, just use common sense and, you know, be sure that you're not meeting up with them at their home or inviting them to your home on a first date or anything like that. Just, you know, like I said, use common sense, and usually it works out really well.
Okay, so we're going to get back to your boyfriend a little bit later on in our discussion. But right now, I'd just like to find out, like, you know, now that you are living your life, you're enjoying life, you're dating online, you're not looking for people in the Kingdom Hall to connect with. And remember, you said that you were shy. So, you know, how is that affecting your life now? Do you actually feel like you're starting to come out of your shell?
I do. In fact, people that I've worked with, as I've been at my job for 10 years, and people that I've worked with for that long, you know, they've even mentioned to me, they're like, you seem like a different person. They say, you're not nearly as shy. You just seem to be coming out of your shell, and you've become a totally different person than you used to be. And so, yeah, I mean, they've commented that even my cousin that I mentioned before, she said, you just seem happier, and you just seem like you're coming into your own and finding out who you are. And that's really true, because as a witness, you're not allowed to be who you are. You're supposed to be who they tell you to be. And so, I am finding out about who I am, what I like to do, and what I enjoy, and finding out who I am as a person. So it's been a really interesting journey so far.
That's really excellent to hear, Cassie. It's very nice knowing and speaking to someone like so many others that I've spoken to in the past that have left this religion and realized that there is life after Watchtower and can actually say they're truly happy. Now, how did it come about that you came to be disassociated? What happened?
I had faded, and I had been out for about 3 years. And an elder from my congregation called my cell phone one day, and this was toward the end of February of this year. And he said that they needed to talk to me, and I asked what the problem was, and he said, well, someone saw something on your Facebook page that you had celebrated Christmas and Valentine's Day and that you were dating someone who didn't seem to be a witness, and they needed to talk to me about that. And I said, well, you know, I haven't been an active witness for 3 years. I haven't had contact with witnesses. I said, I don't feel the need to talk to you about anything. I said, I don't see the need really. And he said, well, if I didn't want to be a witness anymore, I had to meet with them and tell them that. And that just kind of hit me the wrong way. And I had let the coordinator of the body of elders, my old congregation, know that I didn't want to talk to any of them. And about a week went by, and then it was a Sunday afternoon, and my phone rang, and it came up with an unknown number. And so I answered, and it was that same elder and another elder on the line. And they asked if I had spoken with the coordinator of the body of elders, and I said I had. And they said they understood I had said I didn't want to speak with them about anything. And they just kept asking, did I want to be identified as a witness still? And just continually asked, like five times, asked me that question. And I just kept trying to evade it because I knew if I said yes, I was going to lose my family. And, you know, just kept asking. And finally, I just said, you know what? No, I don't want to be identified as a witness anymore. I said, do what you have to do with that. I said, I just, you know, I'm tired of this. And they said, well, if that's how you feel, then the announcement will be made at the meeting this week and or next week. And you will be considered to be disassociated. And so that's what happened.
So they actually tracked you down just because they saw that you were celebrating a few holidays and appeared to be dating someone that was not a Jehovah's Witness. And now, all because of that, you now can't talk to your family pretty much for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So how did that go down with your family? Did you get a chance to talk to them before they made the announcement?
I did. Right after I got off the phone with the two elders, I called my mom and I told her what they said. And, you know, I told her to please tell my dad, and my aunt happened to be in town that weekend. So I told her to please tell them. And, you know, I told her that I loved her. I loved them all very much and that I didn't want to lose them, but I knew as well as she did what the rules are. And, you know, my heart was broken, and I was breaking down in tears. I was sobbing, and I begged her. I said, if there's any way that you can find it in your heart to still have contact with me, I don't want to lose you. And she said, well, you know, if you need us, that's one thing, but you know the rules. And so, you know, there's probably not going to be that much contact. And at first, she didn't really stick by that. She would text me pretty often, but, they had their assembly this past weekend, and we all know what the 2016 convention was about.
Right.
And, so over the weekend, she did send me a text, and she said, I won't be texting you anymore unless it's an emergency. And I can't have any more contact at all unless it's that you're sick or someone in the family is sick. So the convention obviously did its work on her, and I haven't heard from my dad since they made the announcement. So.
Oh, so your dad wouldn't have anything to do with you at all, but your mother was texting you back and forth.
Right. My dad, he had sent me a text before the announcement was made and said that he loved me and I would always be his little girl, but, you know, it is what it is. And they feel more loyalty toward that than they do to me.
Yeah, the summer conventions really did put a damper on people in terms of them trying to fade. And I know my husband did a video about should I fade or should I disassociate. Well, we now realize that that video is basically obsolete now, because based on the Watchtower's definition of shunning, you're to shun anyone who stops going to the meeting or anyone that's inactive. So it's really very sad that they're trying their best to keep people from having any contact with their family who do not go to the Kingdom Hall.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, I had actually, before my parents had their assembly, I had found, you know, the talks and the videos that they had put together for this convention online. And so I did warn my mom. I told her what to expect when she went to this convention. You know, I explained to her about the shunning video and the talk that went along with it. And I just told her, I said, I didn't want this convention to be a total shock to you and to your system, because it's pretty clear about what they're telling you to do. And so I don't think she really believed me at first, because her question was, well, how would you have heard the talk and seen a video from the convention? We haven't even seen it yet. And so, you know, I told her it was online, but I guess she found out the truth when she went to the convention over the weekend. So.
Now, you know, with all the time that you and your mom were texting each other back and forth, did you ever get a chance to talk to her at any point to share any of what you had been learning about the organization?
I did. You know, I would try to slip small things in that, you know, I even tried to use my situation that, you know, I knew my own older sister, my middle sister, she's disassociated as well recently, but she had been out for, oh my gosh, probably close to 10 years, just inactive. But she's living with her boyfriend. She was celebrating the holidays, all of this, and nothing was ever said to her. And I also said my current boyfriend was actually raised as a Jehovah's Witness. He was never baptized.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was raised as one, and he left the organization when he was 18. And then his father had been an elder, but eventually his entire family left as well, both his sisters, his mom, and his dad. They all left the organization. And, you know, I said, look at their situation. You know, they faded. They do holidays and all, and nothing has ever been said to them either. So, you know, I tried to kind of use that situation to say that, you know, why did they come after me when there's so many people doing the same thing? And the only answer I ever got from her was that, you know, it's imperfect men and it's a perfect organization run by imperfect men. She wasn't going to debate that and get into any of that with me. So she just really would shut me down every time I would start in on any of that. So.
Now, I remember you saying that you had a brother and sister that had also left the organization, but nobody had gone after them to disfellowship or disassociate them, but you were kind of surprised that they came after you. So now are you saying that this brother and sister are now disassociated as well?
Yes, they both sent letters and disassociating themselves from the organization.
Oh, really? So what prompted them to send disassociation letters?
When they came after me and disassociated me, they just thought that was really hypocritical on the part of the elders because, you know, not only in their situation, they were doing the same thing, but, you know, we know of a lot of other people who are simply inactive, who celebrate holidays and all of that, and nothing is ever said to them. So they just felt that what was done to me was really wrong, and they just said that was way too hypocritical, and they both sent in their letters.
Well, hey, that was really nice that they supported you like that.
Definitely. I am so grateful to have them because they're a really great support, and, you know, had it not been for having them, I don't know that I would have had the courage to walk away completely from the organization, but between feeling as miserable as I did and seeing the cracks in the foundation of the truth, you know, I knew I had to do something, but having their support has been such a blessing.
That's awesome. Now let's go back to your boyfriend. You said he and his family used to be witnesses, right?
Yes.
So when you filled out your profile on Match.com, did either one of you mention anything about religion?
He said, I actually did not see it on his profile when I was looking at it, but he said he had written on his profile that he was raised in a silly religion, so he had some great stories. I hadn't seen that when I read his profile, but when we met up on our date, we were just talking and kind of feeling out what we had in common, and he asked if I was a religious person, and I said, not so much. I said, I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness, and he just kind of got this shocked look on his face and smiled really big, and I just kind of said, what? And he said, well, I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness. Yes, he was raised in, his family lived in Texas, and his dad was an elder and Watchtower study conductor. So, yeah, we had a lot to talk about after that.
Now, that's really interesting. And it's interesting how you both gravitated to each other, not realizing the affiliation that you both had with Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yes, if that was really wild, it was just like, wow, really?
So do you think that gave you guys a better foundation for your relationship because you both knew that you came from similar backgrounds?
I think it did a lot towards helping us to bond because, you know, if you weren't raised as a witness, it's really hard for people to understand when you say, well, I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness. People who weren't raised that way, they don't really think much about it. They just think, okay, well, she had a really strict religion growing up. But it's when you find someone who went through the exact same thing and knows what it's like, you know, you do have kind of an instant bond there. So yeah, we just hit it off from the first, and, you know, sharing stories back and forth. It's been a lot of fun, actually. Just comparing stories. We talked, you know, a few months after our first date, and he did mention, he's like, I don't know about you, but when you said you were raised as a witness, I felt an instant connection there. And I said, yeah, it was definitely instant. Just like, wow, you get it. And so, yeah, you know, having that in common was just, I think it just helped to, you know, cement our relationship even more.
Yeah, you know, what I think was great about it was the fact that whatever both of you had on your profiles, you were attracted to each other based on that. And then by the fact that both of you were ex-Jehovah's Witnesses was just the icing on the cake.
It was. Yeah, I mean, we just, whatever it was that attracted us in the first place to each other, that was enough. But then to find that connection, too, was just an added bonus, definitely.
So is there anything else you would like to add to the struggles of women? Maybe perhaps there's a sister that's dating a brother in the organization and she feels like this is the only man that's left and she's not really being treated well by him, but she's really trying her best to get this relationship to work. What would you say to her?
You know, I would say that, you know, as lonely as you might be by yourself, it is possible to be even lonelier, even in a relationship, if it's not the right one. And to saddle yourself into a relationship, especially within the Jehovah's Witness organization, that's not right for you, is probably one of the biggest mistakes you could ever make. And while it might feel like he's the only one out there, he's not. And if it's a matter of that you're wanting to leave the organization, yeah, it's scary. And yes, it's hard. But, you know, in my case, especially speaking from my experience, it's the best move I ever made because I am happy. I have a boyfriend that I truly care about and who I am crazy about. And my life is so much better and I'm a much happier person now. So my advice would be, you know, take that leap and see what happens, because I'm pretty sure you're going to find that your freedom is worth any price you have to pay.
Absolutely. And what about depression? Can you tell our listening audience the signs to look for in clinical depression?
Yeah, it's mostly what I went through feeling was just feelings of worthlessness, feeling like you don't matter, that if you didn't wake up in the morning, nobody would care. Most of the time you can tell when someone is a depressed person just the fact that they don't reach out to associate much. They keep to themselves a lot. They just seem very sad most of the time. You know, just feeling like life isn't worth living because it's not going to get any better. And it's a very, very painful thing to live with. But the bright side is that there are people who can help. Definitely, please don't depend on elders to be your counselors or help you, because unfortunately, they're not trained or equipped to help with mental illness. And you really need to go and find professional counselors and doctors who can help you, because that's the only way that you're going to find relief and get true help with that problem.
Do you think you were ever in denial?
At certain points, yes. Especially when I first began, I kind of took my parents' view of it, that I was just being a moody teenager and just needed to get over myself. And I really struggled with, once I realized that I did truly have a problem, I struggled with taking medications. I didn't want to take medication. I really struggled with having to take that pill every day. And I had a counselor at the time who really helped me work through that, just seeing that it's no different than someone who has high blood pressure or someone who has a certain condition they have to take medication for. You take it so that you can get through your day, and you take it to keep yourself healthy and on an even keel. So there's things like that that you have to fight and work through with depression. But if you find the right help, then they can definitely help you. And it's not something that's a hopeless situation at all.
Right. What did you find that the medication worked for you?
I did, actually. You know, it took a few tries to find the right one, because every medication is going to work differently for every person. And so it did take a few times to find the right one. But once we did, you know, I felt like a totally different person. So there's hope out there and there is help. You just have to be willing to go seek it and to work with it once you find it.
Right. Now, did your parents ever go to the elders to get their advice on what to do about your condition?
The elders came to talk to me a few times because I would miss meetings and things like that just because I didn't want to be there and I was feeling really bad. And, you know, the most they ever told me was that I needed to pray more. You know, I needed to build up my faith because I could have Jehovah's Spirit and His blessing and that would help with my depression. And that's a really nice thought, but unfortunately, I needed a lot more than that.
Yeah, that was unrealistic.
It was. I mean, prayer is a wonderful thing, but it's not a miracle cure. And especially when it comes to something that is as serious as depression, you need to seek professional help. And that should have been the first thing that those brothers encouraged me to do. But unfortunately, it wasn't.
And it wasn't too long ago that the society didn't even recommend the friends going to a psychiatrist.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There was a time when that was a big no-no. You didn't go there because they were going to give you, you know, a worldly view of information and probably talk you out of the truth. so, yeah, I definitely remember that happening. And they were very much against antidepressants at one time as well. So I don't think it's so much that way anymore. But, yeah, definitely at the time, they did not want you seeking help from a professional counselor.
Is this something that you experienced in the congregation where they didn't want you seeking professional help?
At first it was, yes. They very much frowned on that and didn't think it was a good idea. Unfortunately, at the time I was suffering from it, the view was that you shouldn't go to counselors or anything like that. It was go out and service more, pray more, go to the meetings, you'll feel better. You know, it was just that unrealistic view that the elders had mentioned to me as well. So, and that's one reason my mom and dad found the brother who was a counselor. They thought maybe that would make a difference. And when that didn't seem to help me much, you know, it was at that point that I was close enough to being old enough to get a full-time job and be able to go get help for myself. It took a while for me to get the help I needed, but thankfully I did.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Cassie. But anyway, do you want to give some tips to individuals about depression and what they might want to look for if they might be depressed?
Definitely. Just don't be afraid to seek help. Don't be ashamed. Don't be embarrassed. I mean, and there are so many people who suffer from it, and it's becoming an epidemic, unfortunately, especially in this country. And so there's no reason to feel embarrassed or ashamed about it because it's, you know, it's not something that's under your control. And, you know, there is help out there, and there are really great doctors and counselors who are some of the most compassionate people you will ever meet and who want nothing more than to see you feel better. So, you know, definitely don't be afraid to seek help. Make sure you have a good support system. You've got people who can be there for you. And, you know, like I said, just don't ever be afraid to ask for help. That's the most important thing.
Well, we have reached the end of this program, and I'd like to thank you, Cassie, for being a part of our show, The Critical Thought, under the special series, The Struggles of Jehovah's Witness Women. And I'm sure our listening audience was able to glean and get some good information from you and your experience.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
If you've been in the struggle and want to appear as a guest on our show, email us at exjwct@gmail.com. The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Critical Thinkers.
This program was sponsored by Critical Thinkers.